Okay, good morning, world. And I just want to ask that we keep in mind that this learning should be La'aliyat Nishmat Ma'ashver, Reb Chaim Yaakov, Ben Binyamin Moshe Zatzal. Today is his Yahrzeit Seit. And we'll start at the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Aleph. So, we've been talking about where you're allowed to rely on a chazaka that something that was extant remains extant. And we've really gone all over with this. We've talked about the question about the wine container when it comes to taking off, utilizing Breira to take off Trumas and Maisers. And we talked about the question of whether a woman can continue to eat Truma and whether you're allowed to deliver a get. That's how all of these Mishnayos started. We've got one last fascinating issue here on this. And that is that even though normally a chaver is very careful never to take off trumas and maisras without having the produce next to the actual peiros that he's going to be using for the trumas and maisra, that's called shalom min hamukaf. So usually a chaver is never going to risk exactly this thing. And this is the reason for why you're supposed to always do it min hamukaf. But here, there are times at which a person could be in a tough situation, as Tosis explains. So it's Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontev. He just got this. He does not have enough to be mafrish. So he wants to be semech on a special place that he set aside tvua, or whatever it was, the min that he's buying, that he's going to be using to be mafrish for this. So in those special emergency circumstances, a chaver is allowed to be term shalom and a mukaf l'tzorech kovet Shabbos or kovet yontev. So this guy had been meniach peirot, liot mafrish aleihem trumot u'ma'asrot. So as often as we do all the time, I'm sure everyone here that is in Eretz Yisrael has done the next piece, ma'ot liot mafrish aleihem ma'aser sheni. So all of us, unless you're a member of one of those organizations that keeps the money for you, you set aside a coin in order to use that to be mafrish, you're maaser sheni. Mafrish is using here, obviously, as another term for peideh, just because it keeps the Mishnah sort of parallel, but it shouldn't confuse us. So you're going to use that money to be peideh, you're maaser sheni. But can you be sure that the coin is still there? Or can you be sure that the peiros that you set aside are still there? Today, we all, Gavi, it's only at the end of the day that we get to the sugya about the sponge stick. You don't have to show it now. Later, the Gemara is going to explain. Okay, fine. You want to do the Barnea kind of stuff? Okay. So keep in mind that Gavi has just illustrated the end of the sugya that we will get to shortly. So in any event, how long can you keep going with this? Well, it's the same thing that we said before. If there's a chazaka, you can rely on the chazaka. You don't have to worry about it. So you could keep being paid at your maaser sheni, even though you haven't checked this morning to make sure that the silver dollar that you put aside is still around or whatever. You could take off your trumas and maaseres from wine that you put aside, even though you're not sure that it hasn't turned vinegarish. But im avdu, let's say you check it out and you discover that indeed it's gone or it's wrecked. What happens then? How far back do you need to worry? So im avdu, hareze choshesh me'et le'et, divrei Rabbi Elazar. What you need to worry about is only the 24 hours. Now, it's not clear. Does that mean 24 hours back? Or does that mean 24 hours up till 24 hours from the time that you had last checked? That the Gemara is going to see. But that's the halacha aliba de Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Yehuda says, there's something else that you need to worry about when it's the type of things that become ruined. So let's see, you should have said wine. If you set aside wine, you need to realize that there are times in the year when the wine is likely to turn vinegarish. And then you've got to check to make sure that that hasn't happened, and because you're not allowed, that is a big machlokas about what would be so bad. Why are you not allowed to use wine vinegar for actually taking off Trumas and Maaser. So the truth is, in the Gemara, there's a big discussion about whether Yayin and Chometz are considered to be two separate minim, because we don't look at the DNA of the stuff, we're looking at the product. So if we look at the product, vinegar and wine are used for such different things that we see them as two completely different products. So then it's obvious why you can't take off from one min on another min. That's simple. The other man, the Amar, holds that obviously when it comes to agricultural issues, we need to take a look at the agricultural root. So it would be a question of the DNA if it's considered to be the same material as the same genes. So why would we call it two minim? And therefore, the point of not being allowed to take off the vinegar for the wine is because simply we're supposed to be mekayim the pasuk baharim chem et chelbo mimeno, and chelbo means the best part, the richest part, which means ein tormim min hara al hayafeh. This is another Gavi point, which maybe he could set down after setting down the sponge stick. So ein tormim, at least we got his attention. Ein tormim min hara al hayafeh. Okay, so that would be another question. So now, when are these three times, says Rabbi Yehuda, that you've got to check in the year and make sure that you haven't actually missed out on the wine that you had set aside? So b'shlosha prakim botkim et hayayin. Bekidum shomotzei achag. Now, right after Sukkot, there is very often a heavy-duty wind out of the east that carries a chamsin with it, and that often causes wine to go sour. Another time that you've got to check is behotza'at smadar. So the smadar, you remember, is the first bud where you could see the actual grapes themselves. And that's after the flower falls off, and then you see, if you've ever looked at a grapevine early on, a tiny equivalent of an actual cluster of grapes, but it's miniature. And those are the little buds of the smadar, of the grapes to be. So when those come out, that's also a period that is oftentimes the wine made earlier becomes sour. And b'shat knisat mayim babosa, which Tosfos likes Rashi's first pshat. The knisa, the reason that he likes it is because in Shvius, we took for granted that there's such a phenomena. And that is at the point of the year when those tiny little boser become filled enough with liquid that you can press them and get some liquid out of them. And since it's called over here mayim, very interesting question. If you did get that liquid out of them, does it have a din of wine if you allow it to turn into wine and ferment? Or is it called yayin? The Rabbeinu Tam has a very interesting story of an event that happened one year in France in which the entire wine crop was messed up. The grapes did not mature, and they made wine out of this mayim in the boser. And they paskened that they don't have to worry about Yayin Nesach that year. And they were not makpid on Goyim touching that wine because of this Gemara that it's called Mayim, that is Nichnas, and it doesn't have a din of Yayin. Fascinating historical sidelight. Oy, Rashi, I'm sure, did not live to see that horrible story. Can you imagine the world famous Rashi wines being ruined? Anyway, so when Rebbe Elazar says, the shear is 24 hours, there's two ways of understanding that. What you could say is that anything that you did in the past 24 hours, relying on those payrot, or relying on that money being there, you're going to have to, be anything beyond that, you're going to have to redo. Say if it was done within the past 24 hours, then that's when we have to worry about it. The other way, because since it was lost now, so we're willing to expand the time of the lost against the previous chazaka, and that's the time that you're going to have to worry to redo it. The other way of learning it is that you have to worry all the way back to the beginning except for the first 24 hours. So in other words, the chazaka, the last time you looked for 24 hours after that, you can rely. But since you've discovered that it's gone now, you've got to worry that maybe after those 24 hours, it was already gone. So this is the machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan says it means 24 hours back from the time that you now checked. So that means that during that period, you're going to have to redo anything done. Let's say you took off trumas and maisers during that period and it's still around, redo it. You were paid at your maiser sheni, be repoed at your maiser sheni because you have to assume the worst. But if the chazakah was still in effect, so 24 hours before, we're going to say it's still in effect, that would be okay. But Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus Omer, Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Barab Yanai, that it means exactly the opposite. It means 24 hours from the time that you know that it was there and you set it down, only for those 24 hours can you assume the best. After the first 24 hours, you have to assume the worst. The exact opposite of Rabbi Elazar, who is saying, up till 24 hours ago, you could assume the best. And then beyond that, you have to assume the worst. Okay, so tonight. Imavdu. So let's say, as our Mishnah asks, Imavdu, Hareze Choshesh, and it says, Me'et La'et. So now, how exactly does that work out according to the way Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus just said? I don't understand. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan said that all we need to worry, we can assume the best up until 24 hours. Within the 24 hours now, we have to worry and assume the worst. Maybe something happened to it within the past 24 hours. Okay, that's what the Mishnah is saying. You are choshesh a period of 24 hours because that's the entire period, mi'et le'et. But according to Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus, it should have said, you are choshesh up until the period of 24 hours, not that you're choshesh for a period of 24 hours. According to him, you could be choshesh for a period of 24 months if that was the last time that you had checked, right? So something is very wrong with the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus. Hi, mi'et li'et. Is that the right way to say it? You should have said, ad mi'et li'et, up until the point of 24 hours, mi'boilet. You're right. That is definitely not exactly an easy way to read the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus. True. Anyway, so says Rabbi Elazar. Now, this leaves us with two different shitot. The approach of Rabbi Yehuda and the approach of Rabbi Yochanan, right? Of Rabbi Elazar. Now, the question is that the only two approaches. Actually, said Rabbi Elazar, now this is Rabbi Elazar the Amora. Again, we've had this several times that we get very confused because we find Rabbi Elazar the Amora, who's Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, explaining what Rabbi Elazar the Tana, who's Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, what he holds. So this is another one of these things. So here comes Rabbi Elazar the Amora, and he's saying that you should know that his chavrusas, they did not agree with him. And actually, those who argue with him, they hold you cannot rely on the chazaka at all. Once you found that the peres were lost or that the money was lost, forget about it. Anything that you had done from the instant you turned away from it, you're going to have to redo. Whether you're talking about taking off the trumas or maisers, or you were poda your maiser sheni. How do I know this? Because there's the famous Mishnah we've spoken about so many times, the Mishnah in Mikvaot. You had a mikveh that had been checked, and it was perfectly good. It had Arba'im Sa'ah in it, and everybody was going to that mikveh for years. Everybody was tevel the things in that mikveh for years. I'm very worried that Gavi's phone fell into the bucket. It seems to be showing... No, not as bad as I thought. Maybe it was Gavi who fell into the bucket. So the question over here is, they say that the Mishnah says that if a year later you go and you check that mikveh and now it no longer has Arba'im Sa'ah in it, then that means that every single one that was tevel in that mikveh And every single kli that you put into that mikveh and you used for tyrus during that year, or for truma, is no good. It's all considered to be tummy. Kol shetaharot shenasu agabav limafreya. Bein b'reshut yachid, bein b'reshut rabin. We say limafreya, we mean going all the way back to the last time that it was checked. And it doesn't matter, even though normally we say suffik tumer b'reshut rabin is tahar. Over here, we won't say that. Why? Because suffik tumer b'reshut rabin means you have a suffik if you touch tumer, if something became tummy. But if something was definitely tummy and now you want to take off the tumah, then you need to know that you took it off because we have a cheskas tumah. Therefore, you're going to have to redo everything. Bein b'reshut yachid, bein b'reshut rabim. Okay, how do you explain the fact that we don't rely on the mikveh for a little bit? I mean, we had a chazaka, the mikveh was good. And according to Rabbi Elazar ben Antigonus, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, he says that you can rely on it. I mean, a little bit you can rely on it. 24 hours, here it says you can rely on it at all, which is the third shita. Is it 24 hours from the time? Is it back 24 hours from the time you put it? Or is it no time at all? And from the time that you discovered it to be missing, it's over. That's the question. So apparently, there's a third shita. Says the Gemara, well, obviously, I know how to read a mikveh, a mishnah. I know how to read a mishnah. So if the mishnah says that you got to go all the way back to Mafreya, so fine. Then I know that there's another shita. I mean, what do I need Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat to teach me how to read a mishnah? No, because I'll tell you, Maudatema, I might have thought if he hadn't clarified it, that when it says limafreya, it means going back. But yes, but limafreya doesn't necessarily mean limafreya all the way to the last time. Limafreya only means that there's a certain period that backwards in time you have to worry about. I don't know what that period is. Maybe it's only 24 hours. So if that's the case, it might mean, remember, we had the same language in Mesechet Nida, when a woman checks and then she discovers that she actually is a Nida, so how much back in time are we choshish for anything that she touched? This was the din of me'ace la'ace, or whether we can rely on mi'pekida le'pekida, and so on, right? So there too we use the lashon limafreya, but it doesn't mean back from the time necessarily that she last checked. That was a machlokas between Shammai and Hillel. So maybe that's what it would have meant over here. That it means limafreya me'et la'et. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is coming to tell me that no, you need to understand that when a Tana does not make a determination of what the shir of me'et la'et is, and he just says limafreya, then he means limafreya. He means exactly that, without any kind of shir. You go back to the time that the chazaka began. You don't have any right to be sumich on it at all. Okay, now Rabbi Yehuda comes along and he says, you've got to check your wine 3 times a year. So Tana, when Rabbi Yehuda said that when the east wind blows after Sukkot, that's talking about only where Sukkot came out late enough in the year that it was already the Tkufa of Tishrei. But if it's still the Tkufa of Tammuz, then this is not true. So it has to be in the fall season as defined by the way that the Chachomim split the year into parts. Now, this is almost unheard of because actually, if Sukkot falls out so early that the end of Sukkot is still in the summertime astronomically, then, and again, when I say astronomically, I don't mean according to the Naval Observatory time, but if it's still within the tkufa, the halacha of the summer, that's one of the reasons that we make the year a shana mu'beret, or we'll do whatever is necessary to get extra months, if we can, to days and months to push the circus into the fall. So how is this possible? So Tosis points out that we actually learn in Rosh Hashanah that you cannot do a change in the year just for this problem. This is one problem if you find an additional issue that is important to push the year off for, then you rely on the tkufa thing. But for the tkufa alone, indeed, it's not unheard of that sukkahs would actually come out during the summertime and not during the fall. So Rabbi Yehuda just wants to clarify if that happens. So then that's not considered to be the period that Rabbi Yehuda was referring to talk about. He was talking about the east wind blows during the actual fall, the tkufa, the new tkufa, in other words. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now, Rabbi Yehuda has other times that he uses the same kind of shlosha prakim. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'shlosha prakim b'shana, mochrim et hatvua. You sell your grain 3 times a year. Gemara is going to say, what the heck are you talking about? I mean, you sell your grain whenever you want to. I mean, what, are we giving advice to businessmen here? I mean, what is that supposed to mean? We'll see what that's referring to in the Gemara. But whatever it is, the 3 times of the year are lifnei hazera, at the time that everybody's buying up seed. So then the grain is going to be used as seed, and the price goes up because there's a tremendous demand for seed, for planting. During the actual planting season, because it could be that the grain was actually bought up during the time that people were buying, which is a month before. And so there's a new surge in demand, as Tosis explains, at the time of the actual planting, because there might have been not enough for you. And you discover you can use some more seed. So there's going to be a spike. And the other time would be as Pesach is getting close. So pros ha-Pesach means half of the Shloshim Yom, which are the time that we start learning the halachas of Pesach. So those are the time that people want to make sure that they have yashan, because they're not going to be able to buy anything from the new grain, right, until after it's already the first day of Pesach. They need to have all of this stuff for yontiv and for matzah baking and so on. So there's going to be a big spike then also. Those are the times that you would sell grain. Now, there's also 3 times a year where you would sell your wine. And that would be Bifros HaPesach, everybody wants wine for Pesach, Bifros HaTzeres, or Bifros HaChag. So over there, there's always going to be a spike in prices. People are going to be looking for wine, and that's when you sell your wine. Says the Gemara, well, what is this? Practical business advice? I don't understand. I mean, if I'm a merchant, obviously I know when to sell. What is he saying? La halacha. What's the halacha over here? Lamai hilchata. Omar Rav Avitamer of Papa, this is a halacha in the dinim of shutafim. So, what that means is, there's two approaches. There's Rashi's approach and Tosis' approach. Rashi's approach is that where you have two people that have bought a grain, let's say, or wine, together. So normally, you need to have your shutaf's agreement if you're going to go out to sell. But if your shutaf is not available and these times have arrived, sell, because he cannot have any taina on you for selling. This is where you have a right to rely on the pricing being the best pricing you're going to get. And if he wants to yell at you, and as we'll see, I'll talk in a minute what happens if it turned out to be a bad time. Tosis learns that the issue over here is in dissolving a partnership where two people invested in a business and they want to sell the business. And we're not talking about just stop making a market sale, but not necessarily would all of these didn't apply to a market sale. Now, the reason that this distinction is important is because the question, this has a very practical implication. You have a financial advisor who is your shutaf in taking care of your stocks, okay? If he sells, convinced that this is like the best price you're going to get, and then it turns out that a week later, the price went up, and he messed you up, but good. The mashmaut of this Gemara is that he can be sued if it's something that's predictable, right? In other words, if you did not make the best decision, like on stocks, I mean, what are you building the decision on? So then the guy, if you didn't sell, he didn't sell with your permission, is going to be able to sue you for selling. As Rashi talks out over here. If, however, you relied on this halacha, so then he can't sell, he can't sue, even if it turns out that the price goes up after you sold. So that would be the Lamai Hilchot Hasver. And again, we actually pass in this halacha that you can sue someone for selling at the time that he guessed was best, and he ended up losing you money. Not losing you money, but not making the maximum money, because 2 weeks later the price went up. You could sue him for that, for not asking you. Fascinating, no? Anyway, ask the Gemara, okay, are these spikes that are literal spikes, or is this a time that extends onward? In other words, we say Lefnei Azera. Is that like exactly a month before? Or is that the whole time from that point on until the next spike? It's okay to sell. What's the din? Mikan ve'elach mai. Amar Rava, every day following that, until obviously that period is over, is considered to be a proper time to sell. Pirkehu. Okay, once we talked about this interesting thing about the wind out of the east. So there's some very interesting psukim that talk about the wind out of the east. One of them is the pasuk in Yonah. So there was Yonah sitting underneath his tree, you know. And the reason he was sitting underneath his tree is HaKadosh Baruch Hu made him that tree because it was so hot. And then it says, Vayiki Zruach HaShemesh, Vayiman Elohim Ruach Kadim Charishit, and oh my gosh, it messes him up. He ends up not having his tree, he goes crazy. Okay, so now the question is, what is the meaning of the word harishit? This, by the way, Israelis have no idea why they call a ruach harishit a ruach harishit. And this you'll hear on the weather report very often, ruach harishit. So the word harishit has come to mean a strong wind. But the Academia for Ivrit has got all kinds of discussions. Why do we call a Ruach Harishit a Ruach Harishit? So this is actually a beautiful Gemara. Why do we call it Harishit? Omer of Yehuda, the Lashon of Harishit reminds you of Harisha, right? So Harisha means creating furrows with your plow. Now, if you look behind me in the window there, you can see that when the wind blows, it actually makes what appears to be furrows in the water. So if the wind is coming out of the Harishit, then it's making furrows. That's how powerful it is. So you can see its impact immediately on the water. So that's why we call it a Harishit, because it's Choresh. Armalei Rabbah. Rabbah says that it doesn't make any sense. It's not because it's Osa Tlomim Bayam. Because if that's the point, then what you're referring to is a strong blowing wind, like stormy, right? But then it doesn't fit the context. Because, I mean, what it is that is happening to Yonah, it says that he faints from the heat and that everything dries up. I mean, that doesn't make sense. If you want to talk about the storm wind, I mean, then why would that be the way to express the Yonah phenomena? The Yonah phenomena is that this is a chamsin, and it's very, very hot, and it's making everyone faint. I mean, that's a different issue. So then we have to look to the word harishit in a different way. And this is what I would suggest, says Rabbah. Doesn't make sense in the context of atach hashemesh arosh yonah v'yitalaf. I mean, adarabah, you know, this wind would be a little bit of a reprieve if he's got a lot of wind. Elo marabah, harishit means a lotion of cheresh, shut up. So it shuts up all of the other winds. So even though you may have nice, soft, cooling, and gentle winds, when that Ruach Harishit blows, it shuts them all up. And that's why it's called Harishit. So B'sha'ah Sheminashevet Mishateket, it shuts up all of the other Ruchot, and they can't have any impact on the horrible heat and what the chamsin that's being brought by that ruach. That's what it means. Now that makes much more sense because, look, it says, Asher begadecha chamim bahashkit eretz midarom. It's a very curious pasuk. So Eov is speaking to those who feel overwhelmed by the heat. They're wearing clothes that are so hot because the Eretz Midarom, the nice wind that would have been blowing gently from the south, is quiet. Mashkit Eretz Midarom. So what is it that was Mashkit the Eretz Midarom? Precisely. Mishateket Kol Aruchot. That's referring to the Ruach HaRishit that Reb Yehuda was talking about here after Sukkot. Omer Rav Tachlifa bar Rav Chisda, Omer Rav Chisda. So he explained it that way, that Ema tai begadecha chamim, b'sha'ah shishkit eretz bidaron. At the time when something cools it down, because shebesha'ah shemenashevet, the ruach that is coming mizrachit, so that is mishateket kol haruchot mipaneha. Rav Huna and Rav Chisda have a yasvet. So once, Rav Huna and Rav Chisda were sitting together, and Geniva was walking by. Now, we had Geniva before. Remember that Geniva was having this big political bachlokas with Mar Ukva, who was the Av Bezdin. And in the end, he was, because of Mar pain he was causing Mar Ukva, they dragged him away and executed him. The government did this. That was the whole story. Mar Ukva asked, is he allowed to actually give the guy over to the government? Incredible story. I mean, it's because Geniva is a big Talmud Chacham. As a matter of fact, Geniva is the man Diomar who teaches that man Malchei Rabbanan, believe it or not. It's an unbelievable thing. Anyway, so there was Geniva, and he was in the Beis HaMedrash, and they, Rav Huna and Rav Chisda, were talking. So one of them says to the other, and we don't want to know who got into the details of this, but one says to the other one, listen, this guy is a big Talmud Chacham, and we should stand up for his covet. So Nekem Mekameit, the Barur Yani, he is a Talmud Chacham. And the other one says, I don't get up in front of people that make machlokasan. That's not, to me, that's not a Talmud Chacham that you give covet to. Mekameit Pargo Nekem, where I'm going to stand up in front of a person, makes machlokasan, talks Lashon Hara, feh, no way. Okay. Meanwhile, Geniva walks over to them. So he asks them, what are you involved in? So they said to him, we're talking about the Ruchot. We were thinking about, like, you know, maybe this Pasuk, this Sugya. Now, Lamaisa, they weren't talking about Ruchot, right? Because they were talking about Geniva. So actually, some of the Mepharshim explain that that's what they meant. We're talking about a man who stuck up Ruach Gavoa, right? So what happens to someone who's got a Ruach Gavoa? That's what we were arguing about, whether we should stand up for you. Obviously, they didn't want to put it that way. But that is what was meant when they said Beruchot. Okay. So they weren't actually totally lying. Okay. So if that's the case, he said to them, well, I can tell you something about that sugya. Because Achi Om Rav Chanan Bar Rava Om Rav, there are arba ruchot that blow and every day, but you should know that the ruach that comes out of the north is always part of all of the ruchot, and if it wouldn't be, Ein Olamit Kayema Filu Sha'ah Achat, you should know that the north wind just keeps the earth cool because of atmospheric circulation, and if we wouldn't have that, El Nino would get us. And therefore, it's a good thing that we have that Ruach Tzfonit. And the worst of these Ruchot is actually the Ruach Dromit is Kasha Mikulam. This is, of course, a problem because we just said that Ruach Dromit would have been cooling. Okay, this is what Rav is saying. That Ruach Dromit would have been the worst, right? And Yomalei Ben Netz Ma'amida. So there's a Malach that's called Ben Netz. So is it called the Ben Netz? Because a Netz is a hawk and has a very big wingspan. So this Malach spreads its wings, kivayachol, and prevents the heat of coming out of the south, which would then be macharevet kol olam kulo mipaneha, and that would actually make the earth uninhabitable. And you see this gufa from the Pasuk in Iyov, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Iyov, you know, you think you know something about how to keep the earth cool. You're like these climate scientists, sure. HaMibinatcha yevar netz yifros kenafav leteman. It's because of your brilliance that the netz is able to spread its wings. It's obviously referring to some kind of spiritual issue, of course. And it blocks the south. So, okay, so we see over here that there's a remez to that. Anyway, So Rav and Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, they were sitting, and Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov was driving by, and Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov was driving in. Can you imagine? He had a golden Tesla, and he's driving by in his golden Tesla, and he is wearing, I mean, somebody who's driving a golden Tesla, he's probably dressed like, you know, one of these guys on stage, which he was. He was dressed in this incredible, glittering, treles kind of coat. I mean, he looked like $1 million, let's put it that way. He could have appeared together with Akiva in Hollywood. I mean, there you go, Akiva. Anyway, but it wasn't for the same the same rewards, because I think everything was in pink when you were in Hollywood. And as a matter of fact, it turns out that the night of the Oscars this year caused a worldwide shortage of pink paint, honestly. They used talking about the times of the year to sell your pink paint, right? So, okay, the Little Mermaid used up all the pink paint in the world. Anyway, so here was Reb Yaakov Bar Yaakov looking, Reb Nachman Bar Yaakov looking very, very cool. And he was not cool at all, as we'll see, because what happened was that Rava went out to say hello. Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak, who was talking to Rava before, did not go out to say hello. And he said, you know, Dilma Miyinshi de Veresh Galuta, and you know, I mean, look, I mean, I see this guy coming. This guy is probably one of these high-flying jet-setters. He didn't recognize him. Who's coming from the Resh Galuta, the very influential. So Rava needs his influence. I don't need his influence. So let him go. Anyway, why didn't he need his influence? It's a very fascinating machlokas here between Rashi and Tosfos. Whether Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak is the Stam Reb Nachman, who was the Chatnei de Venesia, and therefore was very politically, anyway, connected. So he said, I don't need to go talk to these guys, which is what Rashi says. Whereas Tosfos says, on the contrary, it's Reb Nachman Bar Yaakov who is the Stam Reb Nachman, not Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak. He brings many, many rayas, and he says that Rashi got confused over here, and that actually the only reason Reb Nachman Bar Yitzchak didn't go out was because he was independently wealthy, and he didn't need to use any kind of pull for the things he needed. Anyway, in the end, they recognized him. Kidachazir Reb Nachman Bar Yaakov, he sees that this cool cat is actually Reb Nachman Bar Yaakov. He goes out there, and not only is he dressed like a cool cat, he's got his sleeves rolled up, which, I mean, you can imagine is not something that Reb Yaakov would normally have done. And instead of being a cool cat, he says, oh, my God, the air conditioning's broken. I can't take it. This has to do with our Reb Eli Dessler story when he took off his jacket. So here we have a remes to Reb Eli, right? But his wife wasn't with him. Believe me, if his wife was with him, he wouldn't have done it. Okay. So anyway, so he rolls up his sleeves. He says, I can't take it. The demon is blowing. The Shadya is Nashiv. Now, it's very interesting that he calls this wind the demon, because the truth is, this is not the demon. As Tosfos points out, the four winds actually do have names, and the Oruch explains their names, and the Ruach Dromit is called the demon. And this was talking about the Ruach out of the Mizrach, and he was just sort of borrowing, saying it's like the demon is blowing. Anyway, this is, we won't say the language might have been used today about what's blowing, but man, it's a real, as you know. So he was suffering. And anyway, this is another indication of how powerful this was. Omar Rava, you know what Rav said about this wind, the wind out of the east? First of all, a woman can actually lose a fetus because of it, and it can cause miscarriages. Isha mapeledibo. Shmuel says, even oysters will wreck their beautiful pearls at the bottom of the sea when this happens. So afilu margalit shebiyam rakevedbo. And Rabbi Yochanan says, even semen inside of a woman that would have been perfectly good for causing pregnancy, it goes sour. And that normally you would have 72 hours of sperm surviving, not if the wind is blowing. Omrim Nachman Bar Yitzchak, you should know that these three diyukim are ways of understanding the pasuk. Shloshta mikra echad dorsha. There's a beautiful pasuk which is referring really to the story of Yerovam ben Nevat. It's a way of talking about Ephraim. And Ephraim is here a play on words of Yafri. So Ephraim bepashtas comes from the word, of course, for Ephrani, like Yosef said when he named him, right? So in Hosea, when it's talking about what the impact of the descendant of Ephraim, which is Yerovam ben Nevat, the damage that he causes to Klal Yisrael. So he uses now this metaphor. Ki hu ben achim yafri, yavo kadim ruach Hashem mimidbar ole, v'yevosh mikoro, v'hechariv mayano, and hu yishse otzar kol klei chemda. So that's what Hosea writes about it. Okay, so the pashtus is that coming along the wetlands is this wind of Hashem that's coming out of the desert, and the fountains will become all dried up, and the springs will go dry, and everything that was in your treasure house, he's going to walk off with. What is this referring to? So, Tainas, Reb Nachum Bar Yitzchak, these three drushes come from how you understand the pasuk, because it says, Yevosh Mikoro. The Mikor will go dry. What's the Mikor? The Mikor is the way that we refer to the uterus. So Mikoro Yevosh means that a woman can lose a fetus. Yecharav Ma'ayano. The fountain will dry up. That's referring to sperm. And this is Shechvat Zera Shebimei Isha, which will be useless and no longer be able to cause pregnancy. Hu Yishse Otsa Kol Kli Chemda. He's going to walk off with all the valuable things. That was the drush about the pearls, that even the pearls and the oysters are going to dry up because of this. On my Rava, I can tell you some beautiful drush on this pasuk that comes from the Chachomim in Surah, Adi Surahi, because they do an amazing job in being medayik a pasuk, and they're daike kroy, and they said like this, that when it says, ki hu bein achim yafri, so the portion of meaning Yafri is he'll be fruitful, which is a lashon of Ephraim. So it could mean with all of his energies and everything that he does, he's going to cause so much dissension and so much disruption in Klal Yisrael. Okay, they say that the lashon is Yafri means to make loose. So it is Rafia. Rafia means loosening. So then what it's saying is that Yerovam ben Nevat will break up the peace between brothers. That's what it's saying. Ben Achim Yafri. In the metaphorical sense that we're talking about over here, what would be therefore the references of the pasuk? Not to the things that you spoke about, which is about pearls or about sperm or about fetuses. No. If it's a lashon of Yafri, so then the meaning is like this, that it will be shufta bekufina demara rafia. So you know how Gavi was showing us before. If you bring it over to the camera now, Gavi, and now's the time. As I said, you were very, very early. If you take off the actual sponge rag, thank you. So now if you point, please, to the shufta bekufina demara, right at the point where the stick enters into the hole. Now, this particular shufta is not an accurate actual description of today's Gemara, because Gavi thought that you could use one of these screw-in handles, and that's what he bought. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the kind of handle, the old-fashioned handle, in which you had that piece of wood, and you stuffed it into the hole until it finally stuck, because it was so much friction that it was stuck. And then it used to get always got loose. You had to take toothpicks. Then you had to take matches. Don't ask. So I'm not arguing with your choice of the screw-in version. But the Gemara is talking about the old-fashioned version. So when it says, Bein Achim Yafri, what it means is even the handle that you stuck into your sponge will come out when the east wind blows, because it dries things up to such an extent that it just pops out in your hand. Very frustrating. All right, so we have a Barnea-style show and tell today. All right. Actually, it's not really referring to sponge sticks. It's referring to hose, but that'll do. Next time Gavi goes out to water the flowers and does a little bit of hoeing, he can do a better job. Today is Erev Shabbos. Yes, the last step is the nail. Right? Yeah, but then it always shakes. Rav Yosef says that afilu sichta bedafna rafia, that even a peg that you put into the wall to hold something, even that comes loose. That's all the lashon of yafri is to make loose. Rav Acher bar Yaakov Amar, you know, you make these baskets, you know, so you take the wicker and you make it into a basket. When that wind blows, the wicker starts falling apart, pops out of the basket, and you could throw out your wicker baskets even. So Rav Acher bar Yaakov Amar, afilu kanya bechufta is rafia. Oh my gosh. Hadron alach kol haget. We will come back bezrat Hashem. And, there we go. And okay, I guess our fangt on the elik perek, we will do bezrat Hashem when the man of the hour tells us that we're available. El Roi has something wonderful to say. לא הבנתי. עוד? עד הפעם.
האם להלכה צריך לקום לפני אדם כמו גניבה?
שאלה גדולה, מעניין. אני לא רציתי לקחת את זמנך, אבל יש בזה הרבה דברים. The rafia over here, that's the way the Radak understands it, בין השבטים was also the lotion of Yafri, that he was nitgadel over all of them, which caused a lot of problem. And there's a Chasam Sofer that ends this by saying, Otsi da kadosh baruch hu lachzirem l'malchus beis David b'meira kirechdiv u'biksha et Hashem Elokehem ve'et David malkam amen. As far as Gufa, how do we paskin? That is not clear because we don't really have the Lushan of the Palga, so the Palga, there is discussion of the Palga, that the Inyan of Ruach Dromit itself is a remez that Arotzeh Sheyachkim Yadrim, remember, the Gemara says. So the Ruach Dromit, what they were talking about him directly and applying the din of Yeravam ben Nevat to Gneva. So Gneva was a Palga, was because this is this is sort of not nice, but as they say, this is actually broad even in Svarim, but it's not a very kind thing. Talmud Torah keneged kulam. If you've got Talmud Torah, you're fighting with everybody. So maybe the reason that Geneva was making trouble was because of the Ruach Dromit, because he was chacham. Okay, as far as, I mean, how exactly to define such a thing is very, very difficult. I don't think anybody deals with it because we don't know exactly what went on. But, Lechora, it's definitely, if you're Mechabit, someone like that, then it's as if it's you're insulting Marukva, maybe. But I don't know. We'll have to research it and see if there's any truvas on it. But it's a fascinating kind of question. So no, yeah.